get started. The time is 8:33 a.m. on May 19th, 2021, and I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, will you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Caterino?
Present.
Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
We have quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So the Complaint Screening Committee of the Board of Psychologist Examiners, pursuant to Arizona Statutes 32-2081, subsection H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website pursuant to ARS section 32-2081, subsection H1. Upon a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38-431.03, subsection A2, or review confidential records or under subsection A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to challenge the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and requests to speak. A person or representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for those who speak. Please only use initials for patients, children, and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Be advised that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. So with those preliminaries in mind, let's go to agenda item, the third complaint on the agenda, which is, which is complaint number T-21-04 for Brian Boone. And I'm the lead committee member for this complaint and will provide the committee with an overview. So the summary of the complaint is as follows. Dr. Boone is the CEO of the Commission on Accreditation of Rehabilitation Facilities, or CARF, which is an international not-for-profit organization that accredits rehabilitation programs. He was previously licensed in the province of Alberta, Canada, from 2001 to 2006 as a psychologist. The complainant has apparently a screenshot of CARF's website, which shows Dr. Boone as someone who, quote, holds a doctorate in counseling psychology from the University of Alberta and maintains his professional licenses and affiliations in the psychology profession, close quote. Based on that representation on the website, the complainant filed a complaint with our board. Before the complaint was filed, however, Dr. Boone changed the bio on the website to read as follows. Brian holds a doctorate in counseling psychology from the University of Alberta and is a formerly practicing and registered psychologist, close quote. So that's my summary of the complaint.
Mr. Chairman, I see that the complainant CM is here as well as Dr. Boone.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So let's hear from the complainant first. Please speak up and state your initials for the record. And this is your opportunity to make a brief statement. The committee may have questions for you at this time. Please proceed. We can't hear you. I'm sorry, we can't hear you. If you can unmute yourself.
You probably need to check your microphone. It's not connected to the Zoom call, so you'll have to choose the microphone that is connected, even though you're not on mute. So, Nope, we cannot hear you. So go into the Zoom and check your voice, the microphone settings. We cannot hear you. No.
If not, maybe you could call in on the phone and still we could still look at him visually on Zoom.
Yeah. We cannot hear you or even see that now.
I believe she might be in an international location, so I don't know if the number will work for her to call in.
Yeah, it seems
depends
like
on that. Her plan. Her plan, you know, like Verizon, it would work. So, depends.
Could you call in using a phone by any chance?
She is using her phone.
Jennifer, are there any other parties to any other cases that are here? And maybe we could go to another case, and in the interim, maybe CM could email you or call you and we can try to figure this out.
Yeah, she wouldn't be able to call me as an international number, but we CM, you can email me and we can try. But beyond that, I don't know what the technical issue is. We can check and see if Dr. Mumby is here. Dr. Mumby, have you called in?
Jennifer, when CM emails you, why don't you forward those to me and I'll try to do the troubleshooting on my end.
Okay. How about the parties involving Dr. Kwaki?
Looks like both parties are here. However, Dr. Akins, her attorney, I don't see him on here.
Hi.
Good morning.
Are you expecting Dr. Akin to be here representing you?
Yes.
Have you been able to reach him? Because he's not on.
He said he'd be on at 8:30. I was going to give him a call, and I certainly can.
I'm texting
that would be
him
best.
Now.
I'm texting him.
I know, Ms. Galvin, is it possible for us to still do Dr. Boone? I know the complainant wants to speak, but we have all the information.
You may proceed with Dr. Boone. She is a complainant, but not a party to the proceedings. So you could proceed with the matter involving Dr. Boone.
That's helpful, Ms. Galvin. Thank you. And I see the complainant CM is back via video. Just wanted to make sure that we can hear you. If not, I'll move to Dr. Boone at this point, and we can come back to the complainant CM. We still can't hear you, ma'am.
At this point, I think so you are allowed to attend the meeting and listen to the meeting. We can't hear you at this point, but we're going to proceed with the matter.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. So let's proceed with Mr. Boone, Dr. Boone, excuse me. Could you please state your name for the record? And this is your opportunity to make a brief statement. And we may have questions to ask you at this point. Please proceed.
I understand. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Good morning. My name is Brian Boone. I'm the president and CEO of CARF. I wish to make some brief comments regarding complaint T2104 regarding my representing myself as a active practicing psychologist in the state of Arizona. My background, and I know you heard this, and I'm supplementing or perhaps supporting some of the information provided in written form to you. I do have a PhD in counseling psychology. I was a licensed chartered psychologist, they're called, in the province of Alberta from approximately 1985 to May of 2006. In April of 2001, I was offered and accepted a position of the president CEO of CARF International. The news release at that time said that I was an active practicing psychologist. And in fact, I was at that time and retained my license until 2006. There was a number of news releases regarding who I was, where I was from, and my background. That has frankly sustained itself over many years, in spite of the fact that I am no longer an active practicing psychologist. I would like to at least let the committee know that at no time have I ever practiced or revealed or represented myself as an active practicing psychologist in the state of Arizona. My job would not allow me to do that. My contract would not allow me to do that. I have no revenue in that regard, no active activity. I've never assessed, diagnosed, or treated anyone. Upon hearing of the complaint, and I was absent from my office at that time, my EA got a hold of me. I asked that they read what was on our website, which was multiple tabs down. And I immediately said, that's out of date and incorrect, inaccurate, and wrong. Please change it immediately. Also, please find if that information is elsewhere. I'm not sure if it's been there the last 20 years and I've never looked at it, or if something was brought back. So it got changed within 24 hours, and the complainant received an email that was respectful and polite, saying, thank you for identifying the error on our website. That apparently did not satisfy the individual. I admit that it was wrong, but I have not been active in that practice at all. Although I will tell you, a year or two ago, I had a meeting with the APA and they said, oh, you're a psychologist. So no matter what I try to do, that sort of sustains itself with me. And I do correct it when I'm in that regard. So I just want to reaffirm that there was no systematic pursuit on my behalf in any form to represent myself as a psychologist. My past 20 years as a president CEO of CARF, I think, has served our company well in advancing quality practices and services for the health and human services practices throughout the world. If there are any questions, I've made the correction. It was inaccurate. I don't know what else to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Boone, and I appreciate you being here. Could I ask you a few questions, if I may, sure, to get some things on the record? So I heard you say that you have not done any psychological assessments. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Any diagnosis?
No.
Any treatment or correction of mental, emotional, behavioral, or psychological abilities?
No, I'm not licensed in the state. I don't do that.
So help me understand the different licensure levels in Alberta. Is there something, I mean, typically there is an inactive status license, meaning Correct. You haven't surrendered your license, for example. Would that be your status?
No, I have surrendered my license. I will tell you, and I'm in my early 60s. So in the early days, as I refer to them, in 1985, you could become a practicing licensed chartered psychologist with a master's degree. And so I got my license actually before my PhD. That was the rules at the time. Since then, they've changed it to a minimum PhD requirement. So in fact, my time as a psychologist ended in 2006. It is plausible, because people have interviewed me, it's possible that there are other examples of where I'm referenced as a psychologist, but it's nothing that I would have done myself.
Thank you. That's all the questions I have. Members of the committee, do you have any questions to ask?
And if you can hear me, I'm not sure if you can hear me now.
Yes, you can.
Yes, we can. So complainant CM will come back to you, but let's see if the board members have any questions to ask Dr. Boone.
Yes.
I have no questions of Dr. Boone.
Thank you, Dr. Pollard.
I don't have any questions either.
Thank you, Dr. Catrino. So at this time, we'll hear from complainant CM. You may proceed. Thank you. Please state your name.
Okay, thank you.
Just use your initials, please.
My initials are CM, yes. And just to let you know, I've been included in the meeting by telephone since I started. I don't know what the issue is with the audio, but thank you for giving me a few minutes to speak. I noted at the beginning that the references to that Dr. Boone put on the internet, both through the CARF website, which has been under the About Leadership on the CARF site for a number of years, was also put forward on a national committee in DC on suicide prevention, where Dr. Boone led and was practicing psychology, organizational psychology and application of psychology and training professionals, including other psychologists, as well as nursing staff and so forth on a national level, and represented himself as a psychologist and as a licensed psychologist in the United States. And given the fact that he resides in Arizona, one, the public would naturally assume that he is licensed as a psychologist, and permitted to practice psychology as a regulated profession in Arizona and possibly even in Washington, D.C. What moved me to ask these questions of Dr. Boone is the fact that, number one, he is president and CEO of CARF International, which has a very great responsibility and touches the lives of many, many people, both in the United States as well as in Canada and internationally. It sets standards for healthcare and for other social services and agencies internationally. And so what moved me to look at this was two different matters based upon a precept that water takes the shape of its container, essentially. And one of those was in becoming aware of one organization that has been accredited for a number of years by CARF, who had an individual in their employ who had been found guilty by a number of quasi-judicial bodies, both in Canada and the U.S., of misrepresentation, abuse of public trust, and performing regulated tasks without a license. And so that was one of the issues that led me to look at CARF International, as well as the fact that the standards are not published on the CARF site, unlike other accreditation bodies. It's quite secretive. The second issue actually occurred along with the pandemic, which brought out many inequalities in our society and issues in our society. And that had to do with the care of our seniors in Canada, and particularly in the province of Ontario. And my understanding is the Canadian Armed Forces went into some agencies providing care for our seniors in Canada and were absolutely traumatized by what they discovered and the complete breach of standards, care that, I mean, to even call it care, people were not even allowed water. There was no access to water, and people
were
dying.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jean Galvin. Yes. I would ask that you direct the complainant to keep her remarks to her allegations regarding Dr. Boone's potential misrepresentation of his licensure status.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Galvin. If you could please summarize or please explain how the violation of our statutes in Arizona occurred, then we would really appreciate that.
Sure. I assume that one of the questions the board may have for me is what moved me to make the complaint. And that's why I was mentioning the Canadian Armed Forces going into one of the accredited agencies and finding what they did. And so the complaint, I looked at the CARF website, I looked at a number of other internet sites, including the one in Washington, D.C. on the National Suicide Action Alliance, in which Dr. Boone put his credentials on that website and was aware of how he was represented on that site. That this information about Dr. Boone being a licensed psychologist where he resides in the state of Arizona has been on the internet for a number of years. Again, because of the position and because of the idea that water takes the shape of its container, I did ask Dr. Boone directly in April where he was licensed as a psychologist, given the fact that he's practicing psychology in Arizona. I did not get an answer from Dr. Boone about where he was licensed as a psychologist. And I started making inquiries, as did the National Suicide Action Alliance when I contacted somebody from there. They said they also had to do some digging to find out that, in fact, Dr. Boone was not a licensed psychologist in the state of Arizona, and to their belief, not anywhere in the United States, in any state. I also started to make, because I didn't hear from Dr. Boone, I looked at the Arizona board. I could not find him listed as a psychologist who was regulated by the board, licensed by the board, and whose practice of psychology in Arizona was being in any way influenced by what the board does, which is to protect the public trust and to ensure that people that practice psychology are doing so, keeping up with current practices and knowledge. The other statement, of course, that Dr. Boone had made to the public was that he maintained professional affiliations. And so that has to do with the American Psychological Association. And I contacted them as well, and he's never been a member of the American Psychological Association. I gave to the board a paper that was published by the American Psychological Association, which makes reference to Dr. Boone as a psychologist. Now, I understand that Dr. Boone, his registration, and that's what it's called in Canada, his registration to practice psychology was limited to the province of Alberta, as I understand it, and expired in May of 2006. So to purport to the public, as Dr. Boone was doing on the leadership portion of the CARF website and on websites outside of CARF where he was apparently volunteering as a psychologist practicing psychology in Washington State. The province of Alberta.
I'm sorry, you're way over the 5 minutes. Could you please summarize for the committee, please? You're way over the 5 minutes that we have allotted to speak.
The summary of it is that Dr. Boone presented himself as a licensed psychologist in the state of Arizona right up until the fact that I made him aware that I had filed a complaint with the state board in Arizona. At that point, and I didn't let him know, I did let him know, but he never responded to me also when I asked him where he was registered as a psychologist, when I asked him where he was licensed, and specifically in Arizona. And to date, Dr. Boone has not responded to me at any time to say where he was licensed or where he was registered. Now, the date that Dr. Boone was made aware by me that I had filed a complaint with the Arizona board, he then changed the website on CARF, okay, to state that he was a retired psychologist. And I have no, there is no, I firmly believe that had I not filed this complaint with the state board, Dr. Boone would still be misrepresenting himself to the public internationally as a licensed psychologist in the state of Arizona and one who maintains his affiliations in psychology with the American Psychological Association, with whom he's never been a member. Ever. and again, has never been licensed in the state of Arizona. And I don't know whether I can, I'd like to put forward what I think is a remedy for this, and that is that Dr. Boone become licensed, and so that his practice of psychology in the state of Arizona can be regulated, and he can also benefit from all of the educational opportunities that the board has to offer for professionals. It's clear that Dr. Boone and CARF International are aware that the public values what the Arizona State Board has to offer for the practice of psychology and for the protection of the public. If Dr. Boone did not think that the public had placed its trust in the Arizona State Board, he would not have represented himself that way. So I would very humbly suggest that Dr. Boone consider, and that the board consider, helping Dr. Boone become licensed to practice psychology in the state of Arizona, or again, that Dr. Boone cease the practice of psychology in the state of Arizona.
Thank you, ma'am, for your, thank you, ma'am, for your comments. Thank you. I do not have any questions. Do any of the other committee members?
I have a question.
Yes, Dr. Katrina.
You stated that he practiced psychology in Arizona. Do you have any evidence to support that Dr. Boone actually practiced psychology in Arizona?
Dr. Boone does at CARF International, he's the president and CEO. And so the practice of psychology that Dr. Boone is taking part in is he devises standards and brings psychological knowledge and experience and theory to the standards in health and social service programs and behavioral health programs that he is overseeing and accrediting. And it seems to me the only way to ensure that that psychological, the application of that psychological knowledge is up to date is by continuing education and all of the things that the state board brings to support professionals hold the public trust. And
I think of it like a hospital administrator. I mean, they're not always medical doctors, but they do administer the hospital and help to hire professionals and maintain the mission of the hospital. How is this different than that? I see practicing psychology more in working directly with the public, either in individual or groups settings.
Again, I would say it's the practice of psychology includes the application of specialized body of knowledge that psychology says that it has as a profession. And so when you bring that psychological knowledge, whether you are practicing with an individual or with a group, and clearly, it's important. And Dr. Boone himself and CARF International recognizes that it's important to present Dr. Boone as a licensed psychologist because it brings trust from the public. There's an authority that comes along with someone who is practicing, a practicing psychologist and is a licensed psychologist, and who is bringing that expert body of knowledge to things such as suicide prevention programs on a national level, things of behavioral health and human services and health services that are being provided, how those programs are done, for example, the social safeguards that are built into those programs to protect vulnerable people, for example, that's the application of psychology. And it's psychological knowledge that needs to be kept up to date. Things change over time, they progress over time, the knowledge expands. Even the American Psychological Association, in the letter that I passed to the board, you know, the title of that is Psychology Gains More Power on Key Accrediting Board. So clearly it's important to have a licensed psychologist who is keeping up with current trends and knowledge and is holding that public trust that is, you know, kind of precarious in the times that we're living in. The board brings that in.
Dr. Diana, I think we need to
the professional.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Malad. Any other questions for Complaint CM? Thank you. So I think at this point, we'll move on to deliberations. Please note that deliberation is the time for the committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interpretation, without interruption from the complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing the licensees. Thank you, Ms. CM, for your thoughts and comments, and thank you for bringing this matter to our attention.
Thank you.
So since I'm the lead board member, let me start the deliberations. So I think our role as the complaint screening committee is to look at our statutes and see if there is any potential violation. And I'm looking at our definition of practice of psychology. And it's defined as psychological assessment, diagnosis, treatment, or correction of mental, emotional, behavioral, or psychological abilities, illnesses, or disorders, or purporting or attempting to do this, consistent with Section 32-2076. So from what I've heard from the complainant CM and from what I've heard from Dr. Boone, I just don't see a violation of our statutory definition. So that's in way of kind of commencing deliberation. I welcome the thoughts of the other board members.
Mr. Diner, I'd like to speak.
Yes, Dr. Malad.
As I review the complaint and all of the information that was provided, I want to thank CM for making Dr. Boone aware of the misrepresentation of this credentials. I know some of it was entered when he was in 2001, when he was still a licensed psychologist. And then it never got corrected when he ceased to be a licensed psychologist. I think it's a lesson for all psychologists and other licensed practitioners that, you know, when you cease license, and especially because the web is so, it spreads its web. That's why it's called a web throughout the world. You know, we would have to go. I'm thinking of myself as I'm entering the last decade of my work. You know, something I need to remind people that they need to be careful with their credentials and correct it. So I appreciate CM bringing it to the notice of Dr. Boone. However, I do take objection to some of her statements. Dr. Boone has had over 30 years of practice, and he has knowledge and experience that makes him extremely eligible to serve on boards like CARF and other entities and share that knowledge and wisdom. That is the stage of his career. And one does not have to be a licensed psychologist to share that. He brings his knowledge and expertise. And I would imagine, like many licensed psychologists, they are reading and they're keeping up with the literature and they're doing all the things that, you know, help us all, you know, thrive as we, you know, have really devoted our entire life to a profession. And I hope Dr. Boone is doing the same. So his presence on those boards does not require a license, and it is part and parcel of giving back to the profession in spades. So I admire the work that he's done and his commitment to the profession and his ability to use his knowledge and his experience. He needs to be more diligent in, you know, representing himself and in title violations. We caution and we ask people to make the changes. He's made the changes. And so I would be comfortable with moving to a dismissal. And, I know Dr. Kett. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. Dr. Catrino, any further discussion?
Yes, I do. I agreed with you on the definition of psychological services because I'm also thinking a professor of psychology can discuss those theories and does not have to be licensed at a university, yet can influence a psychological community and the community as a whole. I think that the places where it was listed that he was a psychologist were not things that he said, apparently. They were written by other people in articles or corporate blurbs. And I don't see that we have any record that he charged people as a psychologist or had insurance payments as a psychologist. So I don't, and then he did correct it when he was told, when he was informed that the information was out of date. I do think it's very good that CM brought this to our attention and did, and so that now it is corrected and everything is current. But I think it should be dismissed also, since it seems like everything is done. And her suggestion of having him become licensed, that's really a personal choice. I don't think we can impose that on him. Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Catrino. So with that discussion, I would like to make a motion to dismiss complaint number T-21-04.
Second.
A second. Thank you, Dr. Malott. There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. There are none opposed, so the motion passes. Thank you, Ms. CM, for bringing this to our attention, and thank you, Dr. Boone, for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we can go to agenda item 3A for Dr. Mumby's case. All participants are here and Dr. Mumby has called in.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So let's move to complaint number 21-14 for Suzanne Mumby. Dr. Malott, since you're the lead member, would you please provide the committee with an overview?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Dinar. Dr. Mumby, complainant number 21-14, to provide you a brief history of her, what led to the complaint. In June 2020, Dr. Mumby began working for Bayless Integrated Care. The complaint was filed by PD, who is the vice president at Bayless Integrated Care. And the complaint, the main reason for the complaint was that Dr. Mumby did not attend to client needs. In September 2020, Dr. Mumby went on an unpaid medical leave of absence. Just prior to that, she was in conversation with the clinical director regarding this medical leave. There has been a hit prior to September 2020, which has some bearing, I think, on the complaint. Dr. Mumby was presented with a performance improvement plan regarding increasing her productivity at the agency and documentation of any contact made with clients as part of her work, having complete documentation. Dr. Mumby was then, there was more information a month later, and the director and her supervisor felt that the progress wasn't at the level that they were expecting. When Dr. Mumby filed for this medical leave of absence in September 2020, she was asked to ensure that continuity of care was assured for all her clients and that her clients were notified of her absence and to document all of those notifications. On 9/25, she had a conversation with her direct supervisor, Etsy, and she assured her supervisor that all contact was made with her clients and asked for assistance with a couple of high-risk cases and making arrangements. She then went on leave on 9/25. She did receive communication from HR indicating that while she was on an unpaid leave of absence, that she could not have any contact with her clients or do any clinical work during that absence. So so that happened on 9/25. On 10/8, she requested additional leave because things were not going well. She was told by HR that not to worry, to take as much, you know, to take the leave that she needs. On January 4th, she requested additional leave due to another medical condition, and we have medical documentation regarding that condition. On January 15th, I could get my dates might be not totally accurate there, but anyway, she received a termination notice from HR. HR indicates that they mailed it to her. However, Dr. Mumby indicated that she did not receive the termination notice. The only time she found out about her termination was when she was notified of the board complaint. In March 2021, the board complaint was filed. Dr. Mumby was notified, and she found out that she was terminated. She also references an incident in December where she received the Bayless Christmas holiday card and holiday gift. Dr. Mumby responded in a timely manner to this complaint, indicating that she did due diligence in responding to client needs, that she was not aware of her termination until the board was complaint was filed. She also indicated some new employment as of April, and she has a small private practice. So that kind of summarizes my case review of Dr. Mumby's complaint.
Thank you, Dr. Malott. So at this time, Ms. Michelson, we have the complainant, I believe, and the attorney for Dr. Mumby and Dr. Mumby present, correct? Yeah, I think Ms. Michelson's connection might be frozen.
But I see PD online.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see that as well. So PD, if you could please speak up and state your initials for the record. This is your opportunity for a brief statement to the committee members. The committee may have questions to ask you at this time. And I think there are two other representatives from the agency that are also present. And you may introduce yourselves and we'll take you in turn. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you very much. PD, I'm the Vice President of Behavioral Health Services, and then also present HC, who is the clinical director of Ms. Mumby, or Dr. Mumby, and then Ms. Schoening, who is our HR director. A couple points of clarification, and AS can probably do a better job of summarizing. There was a request for leave. However, there was a lack of communication, completion of documentation to fully inform the agency of the type of leave and what was going to take place. And I'll let AS expand on that in just a second. There was also a lack of responsiveness to HC, which led to concerns about continuity of care, coordination of care for this caseload of clients. In addition to the unresponsiveness, there was a request for a return of her equipment, Bayless cell phone and Bayless computer, neither of which have been returned and according to our IT department have been turned on and utilized in some manner. So we have concerns regarding the unresponsiveness, the lack of communication, as well as not returning the equipment in terms of unprofessionalism and essentially a risk of client abandonment. And so I will turn it over to AS if you want to give some clarification on the process with the leave.
Thank you. So she met with the HR department on the 24th of September
for a future dated leave. There was an email that was sent to her that was provided for the case as well, outlining what was going to be required in addition to FMLA paperwork that needed to be filled out and completed by a doctor and returned within 15 days. To date, no paperwork has ever been received to actually accommodate a leave. She went out on leave on 9/25, which again was weeks prior to what she had anticipated and spoken with HR in regards to. When she went out on leave without the HR department having planned that she was leaving the next day, her payroll had not been turned off, and she received overpayment for one entire pay period for an equivalent of 86.67 hours or $3,333. On November 17th, I emailed Dr. Mumby specifically informing her that there was overpayment. She was on leave without pay and that she needed to repay us for the entire amount of that paycheck. She responded to me on the 19th, stating that she thought that it was for P4P, which is a commission calculation for pay. I responded to her on the 20th, confirming that there was no P4P. She was not eligible for any commission within her first 90-day duration, and re-emphasized how she was going to reimburse us for the $3,333. From that email, there was no response. So we have not received any repayment for while she was on leave and received an entire paycheck. From that point, on December 29th, we did reach out to her again to state that she had exhausted her leave and that we needed to hear back from her. On January 4th, I followed up with her again with an email at that time after the voicemail at 9:11 in the morning, confirming that she had been non-responsive to multiple emails as well as voicemails, and did not reach back out to me to share any additional information. I will also state that on 10/28, I have no record of her contacting HR and HR supporting any additional leave. At that time, we had no documentation of why she was on leave and nothing supported from a provider to support her continued leave. So again, on record, I do not have anything in her file stating that that was asked for an extension of leave. After 10 days of no contact off of January 4th, she was terminated on the 15th of January with a letter that was mailed to her home.
Thank you, AS. If Ed C would like to make any statement to the board, you may proceed at this time. We can't hear you.
You're not on mute, so it's the same microphone issue.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I apologize. I just wanted to clarify regarding client contact. I had received an email, as shared earlier, on the 25th that Dr. Mumby would be, or sorry, the 24th that Dr. Mumby would be starting leave the next day on the 25th, and I had outreached her immediately within 15 minutes, asking to spend at least 15 to 20 minutes going through her entire caseload of about 50 to 60 patients to verify which patients were outreach, which patients were higher risk, which patients would likely be transferred due to their needs, due to hospital discharges, you know, high acuity patients. That there was never a response to that email. So that date of the 25th, I did have to outreach every single one of her clients to confirm their safety, talk about transitions, to make sure that they were aware. And there were multiple clients that shared that they were not outreached or made aware of her leave. Some were, and some had shared that there had been a text received or a voicemail received earlier in the week, before I was even notified that she was going on leave, that she would be on leave temporarily. So I just wanted to clarify that piece regarding client engagement.
Could you say how many were never received no notification? Do you have any numbers or what percent roughly? Or
I don't want to misrepresent. If I needed to, I could go back through and clarify that. But I'll say at least 10 to 15 clients were not notified or outreached or documented that there was an outreach. That was one of the challenges we had shared at the beginning regarding her performance improvement plan, is there were missing documentation in many client charts if and when she had outreached them. So that's the other challenge too.
Etsy, I had a question for you. I see an email exchange between you and Dr. Mumbi, where Dr. Mumbi says, not to worry, do you recall receiving that email?
Yes.
Okay, so you did have some contact.
That was the original email that came to me that said, hey, I'm going on leave starting tomorrow. Don't worry, my caseload is in a good place. And then my immediate response that I had shared was, I'd like to chat with you before you take leave so we can clarify that all clients have been outreached and have a continuity of care plan. And from there, I didn't receive a response.
Okay.
I have a question on page 2. It did indicate there was an email. Maybe this is from Ms. Dobrons. I said, you know, she has not been being productive and has not been getting more clients. I thought you gave her so many clients, a caseload. What was she supposed to be doing, getting more clients, on the bottom of page 2? She is not scheduling enough clients per day. And we don't see that she has been increasing productivity. What were you expecting?
That was due to the initial performance improvement plan. She had a caseload assigned to her. HC assigns the caseloads to her team. She had the caseload assigned, and our policy is to outreach the client within 48 hours, the assigned therapist is, to coordinate care and schedule their appointment. And so she wasn't doing the outreach, or as HC mentioned, we weren't able to see that the outreach had been done as it wasn't documented in the chart. So part of the performance improvement plan was working with her in terms of her outreach and case management documentation, the administrative functions of her job, to make sure that we had access to care for our patients and getting them in a timely manner.
So Ida, but these patients had originally made an appointment with her, and then she didn't follow up to make second or third appointments?
No. So most of our clients, if they're commercial insurance, they come to our clinical directors, which is what HC, her position is, and they assign directly to the therapist who then schedules the initial appointment. Our access clients go through an intake and then are assigned to a therapist, and the therapist does the outreach to then schedule ongoing therapy. So Dr. Mumbi would get a list of the patients assigned to her, and it was her responsibility to outreach and schedule. And that's where these patients were falling through the cracks.
Okay. The other thing, is there any way to find out about how many clients were, you said maybe you could find out how many clients were documented that she had reached them, and then when you called that they were in agreement? Were there some documents that she said she had contacted clients and they said no, they never heard from her? Any, you know, things that did not jive? So
I would ask HC to answer that.
Yes, I have documented all of the outreaches from those clients back in September, but I can't tell you off the top of my head. I would need to run that prior report and then go through client by client to give you that correct information.
So as off the top of your head, do you recall any contradictory statements? It seemed like it was documented. I called them and when you spoke to them, I said, we never even heard from them.
Well, just from her email that stated my caseload was in a good place and that she had outreached her clients gave me the clinical impression that she had outreached every single one of those clients to make them aware. And when I called, at least 10 to 15 said they were not notified. They were not outreached by her.
Right. Yeah, I see that. But I was thinking in their chart if there was specific documentation that was incorrect.
I don't have that off the top of my head. No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Oh, wait, I have one other question. She said that she didn't do the paperwork because she couldn't qualify for FMLA for some reason. I don't understand that. Can anybody explain that? Other than you three?
Sure. FMLA is a federally protected leave, but just to be eligible for leave
for an extended period of time within our policy, beyond 5 days, that you are required to fill out the FMLA paperwork to help support the reason for the leave. And so that is required per policy for any employee, whether they qualify for FMLA or not, to actually document to us their reason for going out on an extended leave when they do not qualify.
And was that given to an employee handbook? Did she know? How did she know that was?
Yeah, so when it, correct. When employees start, they go through a significant amount of training through a system called Relias, and our handbook with a number of our policies are listed in there that they need to go through and attest to. So specifically, there would be an overview, but we also have the email that was sent to her on 9/24. That did outline to her specifically what the policy was with the attached paperwork that was going to be required. And again, there was no confirmation or response to that email that we sent to her outlining the process on 9/24.
Thank you.
Mr. Dunn.
Oh, look, I'm sorry, I have one other question. She said she never got a cell phone. That she did not get a cell phone. Do you have documentation that she was given a cell phone?
All of our providers are given cell phones, and I can go back to our IT department to obtain, there is a form that they do have to sign off on when they take equipment from us. So yes, I can go through it and pull that paperwork.
Thank you, sorry to interrupt.
No, and
Dr. Malat.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a point of clarification. As a board, we are concerned with client care. Returning of equipment, filing paperwork is not the board's purview to even review. So I would really like to stick to our questions regarding, unless it is germane, and Ms. Galvin can correct me. But really, to me, the biggest issue that I see, so while I appreciate the detailed HR documentation and records, my concern is client care and the outreach and client abandonment. As a board, we are responsible to protect client services. And as you pointed out in the last case, treatment, assessment, continuity of care. So while I think the other information may have some bearing, whether somebody qualifies for FMLA, doesn't qualify, all of that is outside the purview of this board. And Ms. Galvin, please correct me if I'm wrong.
Could I speak to that for a moment?
Yes, you may.
Just in terms of the perspective of us in filing the complaint, I think the concern for us and why that was included was the pattern of behavior and unprofessionalism and not being responsive. And so that parallel process of you're not interacting with the leadership team and your employer, are you really taking care of and being responsive to your client needs and professional in those relationships as well? And that was part of our rationale for including it.
Thank you. Any other questions for PD, AS, or HC? Hearing none, let's proceed to hear from Dr. Mumby. Dr. Mumby, if you're present, would you please state your name for the record? This is the time for you to make a statement of up to 5 minutes. The board may have questions of you at this time. Please proceed.
And Dr. Mumby, you will need to unmute the end, your end on the call.
Good morning, board. This is Dr. Mumby. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for hearing this matter. And so my response is in a response to Bayless's concern and complaint number 21-14. And first of all, I just wanted to clarify that the events that have led up until September 24th with me conferring with Ms. Carr was, I believe, completely supported by Bayless. And I believe that I did do my due diligence and to take, I think, above and beyond what I actually was physically able to do. I was communicated my need for a leave of absence, and I contacted Ms. Carr and discussed that, and she verbally discussed that with me, and she referred me to HR, and then that conversation continued with HR, and which I did provide those emails and to outline the process. In no way, shape, or regard would I ever just contact my clinical supervisor and say, hey, I'm going on leave. My caseload is good. I would never do that, and I did not do that. That is not accurate. So I had a conversation with HR and discussed the options, and FMLA is a federally protected leave, and I wasn't eligible for that, hence I could not do that paperwork. And the short-term medical disability leave, that's something that's optional, and it's not required of any employee, and that is what I...
Dr. Mumbi, yeah. can I please interrupt you at this point, because I think you may not have been present for the preliminary procedural matters that I had covered. Please don't refer to any of the complaining parties, PD, AS, or HC by their last names or first names. Please just use initials. And if you wish to discuss any confidential personal health information, please don't state it in the open meeting. We might need to go into executive session. So I just wanted to reiterate those two things. Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for clarifying. My apologies for not hearing that prior to my arrival. I wasn't able to get the beginning. So, and just to back up, I believe where I left off was, so I did have those conversations with HR, specifically an HR specialist, and that person was not a person who is here, but there is documentation I did provide of that communication to the board to show that this was something that was planned, and I believed I was following procedures and communicating, and as I said, not just abandoning my patients, and specifically the allegation is the lack of contact made it difficult to plan for patient care. So I did have that support in going through contacting all of the patients that were active and who I had upcoming appointments with, and which I did. And I just wanted to remind the board that it was over 60 to 70 patients who I did have. And I went through and contacted them and did my due diligence, especially the ones who were considered high risk, priority, needing special care, and encouraging case management to also support in my absence, which was initially identified as a return date of October 8th. And I believe that there was some misunderstanding from HR. It seems like HR policies and procedures that they usually might follow were not followed, and some of the confusion was possibly because of that. And so for that two-week time frame, that was my concern. You know, how can we manage this client care for those 2 weeks? And that's when I met with Ms. Carr, and we had a session which could be verified. It was, I believe, on Microsoft Teams, I believe. I believe that was September 24th. And we'd go through a list that were the urgent ones. There wasn't very many. And I coordinated their care with case managers. And so HC was notified and supportive of that. And I think where maybe the concern was my not returning after October 8th, and I did request HR. I updated the information that I'm no longer able to come as previously planned, and I immediately requested that outreach be done with my patients, as I was not permitted to do that with a following update. And HR did confirm that they would definitely do that. So my understanding is that patient care was always, communicated, and it was of high value, and there was no lack of care. I believe my patients were supervised by HC. And also, I believe in that email, I did request that they be reassigned to a new provider, as I was unsure of the date. And I just want to stress that at no time did I believe that there was a deadline or a timeline, and I did receive some phone calls, I believe two, from AS, And I cannot confirm anything else that I did receive, but and this might be necessary to go into executive session, but what the understanding that I had was that I had full support from Bayless, and my patient caseload was reassigned, and that was confirmed with I will come, you know, reach out to you with any further paperwork. And I didn't have anything that was provided. And then additionally, I was posted on their website as providers all the way up until March 2021. I received a Christmas, you know, gift vacation card or Christmas card, I believe it was, holiday card, and that was in December. And again, so there was communication. I did not receive any letter of termination. I definitely would have responded, and I know that the board did mention that they are not as concerned about the, you know, the equipment, but I do just want to clarify, I did not receive a cell phone. That can be definitely confirmed with IT. That was a new program, and I did not ever get a cell phone. The laptop, yes, I was in possession of that, and I did return that, and I did provide the email confirmation that it was returned. And again, I really just want to reiterate, and I agree to the summary of the events, but just my understanding, I just wanted to stress that I had intended to return to Bayless. I intended to return as a provider, doing psychology, and either as full-time or part-time, and that was communicated in my email as well. So I have never any intention of being abandoning my job, not responding, or honestly, I believed I had that support. And if necessary, if we need to go into executive session, then I can explain some other factors that also led into that. And I just believe this is a misunderstanding, and it's so unfortunate. However, if HR had been more diligent with the requiring specific things for a non-short-term disability leave, that it was medical, but it was just an unpaid medical leave, if there was some type of procedure that was outlined from the beginning or at least October 8th, then I believe this could have been prevented. But I honestly do take full responsibility if there was a misunderstanding on my end. And could I have done better? Absolutely. Absolutely. But in hindsight, you know, that's how we learn. And I just want to convey to the board that, again, if executive session is necessary, I can explain some other factors that went into the situation, but it was never in any attempt. And I do want to stress that, as far as I understand, there was no public harm that was caused by this unfortunate situation.
Thank you, Dr. Mumbi. Do any of the committee members have any questions?
Yes, I do.
Dr. Katerina.
I have 4 points I want to make. So the first one, the first one was, Dr. Mumbi, is the FMLA form. I just want to mention that you said that you did not need to do it, but they told us from HR that they laid that out, that that was a requirement of the company, even if it were, you weren't eligible according to the government. And that was told to you that it was a requirement in your orientation and handbook and in a letter you received. So second point, do you have any copies of the documentation you gave to the clients? Is there any way to for us to verify that you did contact each client on the caseload?
I'm sorry, I don't have access to any system, but it sounds like we do have some verbal confirmation of at least some contact from HC that it was there was some process that was informed. And again, this was something that was, I was trying my best to do in respecting the need for continuity of care. However, because of the leave, it was nearly physically impossible for me to do what I did, and I still did it. I pushed through, and the whole entire week I worked on contacting patients. So there should be obviously the sessions who were provided; those would be documented. So I do apologize. I don't have anything per se, but I do want to just express I felt I did my due diligence despite a very difficult and challenging time.
Okay. The other point is, can you give us just a brief timeline? So here's what I have. September 24th, you requested leave. September 25th, you went on leave. You then October, could you just go through the months and your timeline to the termination on January 15th and beyond?
Yes, and I'm sorry if some of the dates aren't maybe specifically, but there are some dates that have stood out because of the email verification. And the verbal conversations with HC occurred prior to me reaching out to HR. And I was informed of the process and to do that. And so I believe that would have been the last week of September is what I noted. But it was definitely prior to the 24th. In fact, I believe it was the prior week because my intention, my hope was to go on leave immediately because of the situation. However, because of my concern and wanting to have continuity of care, and even for just 2 weeks, just knowing, the services were provided and being telepsych and not having the clinic open in the middle of a pandemic, I wanted to go above and beyond and make sure we did have that contact. So I would like to say the conversation started probably the last week of probably September 17th, September 19th, around there. And then the formal notification that was sent, it was a discussion with HR, was on the 24th, mm-hmm. but that was something that was led up to. And then again, it was just going to be a temporary. We just said just October 8th as the date. And then it was after that we were in contact that it was not going to be at that point. And I requested that continuity of care be provided so patients were reassigned. And then again, I thought I was on that supported unpaid leave and had that all covered. And I never received any other documentation. And if it wasn't done correctly, then my concern is that Bayless didn't inform me right away. And I just received the email responses like, we'll let you know if there's anything additional needed. And it was supportive in nature. It wasn't anything that I was being neglectful or deficient. And then again, I had a notification from the complaint. I believe it was March 10th or 12th. And that's when I was, shocked because I thought, again, I was on the provider website for their page. And my intention was to return, likely as a part-time employee. But I always intended to return to the Bayless team. So I was shocked. So as soon as that occurred, then I started making sure I was getting everything off the laptop, and then that was actually returned. However, I have to say that it could not be returned prior because I was believed I was still an employee, and then there was exposure where I was not able to bring that safely into a public place. So,
okay, sorry, but to go one to, I know we have limited time. When did you begin your private practice?
Oh, that's something I've had, May 2019.
Okay, so that's, and is that acceptable to Bayless that you can have both private practice and work for Bayless?
Yeah, I believe as far as my understanding, because we talked about that, there are some providers who had a Psychology Today account, and HC was very supportive if they did not want the publication as you representing Bayless, but you wanted your private practice on Psychology Today as advertised, then that's something that they could support. So, yeah, that's definitely supportive. I do believe there's probably a non-competition agreement or something that was that's very typical where I wouldn't be, like, recruiting patients or taking patients from that practice or the referrals. But
did you work in your private practice from any time from September 24th until January 15th when you were terminated? Did you see clients
for a short time? Yes. For a short time, yes. However, due to the issues that I would, if needed, discuss in an executive session, there was no other contact made in even private practice sessions until January 18th. So again,
I'm confused. You said you worked in it before the 18th, or Okay, I asked if you worked up to the 15th, and you said yes, or did you mean you started working on the 18th?
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I was just clarifying that after doing the leave with Bayless, then yes, I had private practice patients that I was wrapping up continuity of care, and then there was no patient contact. There was nothing for quite some time. I'd have to look at the dates, but again, my private practice is very small, less than 10, you know, so it wasn't anything that, and again, my leave was not, because of my inability to do clinical work, my inability, you know, I wasn't professionally compromised in any way, but it was because of those reasons I could discuss in executive session.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks.
Mr. Ben.
Yes, Dr. Mullah.
Thank you. Dr. Mambi, I do have a few questions. So, I'm trying to keep track of the dates. So on the 24th, and I'm looking at all the emails, you indicated that you were going to go on medical leave following the next week. I'm thinking after Friday, the 25th of September. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, I can't quite. My understanding was the email was right before the medical leave. That HR discussion and that confirmation was prior to. So I believe it was the 25th. That it began, because I recall that the date of return, the anticipated date, was October 8th, I believe.
Okay. So it says, this is from, I'm assuming, HR, J.E. Hello, Dr. Mambi. I'm following up on the email before and our conversation from yesterday. Provide us an update as soon as possible. And so on the 24th, you had a conversation with somebody in HR regarding going on leave. When was the first time you had a conversation with your clinical director, Etsy, on going on this leave?
Yes, I will, if you don't mind, I will pull up a calendar and try to get a more specific date. And so if we're looking at, we know it was in September, and let me go back. Okay, so yeah, these conversations happened throughout the last week, September 20th until the 25th. And so I believe that I mentioned that on the 17th or the 18th directly to HC. And that was, if that is completely false, if maybe that was something that I intended to do, but actually didn't do formally, but it was just my plan of requesting, that the absolute latest would have been September 21st.
Did you talk to HC or did you not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, I had her support, and again, that meeting can be verified on, I believe, Microsoft Teams, that we did follow up. It was not just an email. I would never, ever do that.
Okay, so when Etsy wrote to you, you know, regarding your care plan, I see a note to her, and you indicated, yes, not to worry, I have, you said, I've been diligently trying to connect with all the patients to inform them of my status and provide alternative resources. I scheduled sessions this week. So did you contact every single person, the 70, or did, I'm curious about that, since you said you had.
Well, and I can't say, I have the list in front of me. I can't say. I know that I felt like I know all the active patients, yes, completely were the ones who had appointments, the ones who had pending appointments, and that can be confirmed also in their system, the online system, where there were sessions actually scheduled for my return, which I believe would have been October 9th and 10th. I had sessions scheduled. October 8th was a day that I was going to reach out to everyone to let them know of my return. So some of that can be verified. And I believe that despite the condition of the situation, I did do my duty.
But Dr. Mambi, I just want to clarify, this is a really important point. In your email, okay. You said, I feel like my caseload is in a good place. I've been diligently trying to connect with all the patients to inform them. So what did you mean by all the patients?
Well, the way the Baylis system operates is that there is an endless amount of referrals. I mean, it's almost unmanageable and almost on the board of unethical. But, you know, it's our job as clinicians to maintain contact and to monitor, to reach out and document like three attempts. And that is something that is a new system to me. I've always had an assistant or a coordinator to assist with that. So that was a learning curve to be able to document all of the admin parts of that. And so my understanding is that, yes, for the active patients who I was seeing, which, especially the ones who were, again, all the ones who are high risk or the ones who I had scheduled, they were all directly communicated with. I kind of believe that this was just like a vacation, noted. Like it was only a 2-week intention. So that's where, in hindsight, should a letter been sent out? Should there have been even more? But that was not the understanding at the point. It was just essentially a 2-week, like vacation, whatever you want to refer to. So I believe in that instance, yes, it was something where you are being reassigned, that, your patient care is changing, then I think that would have been a different, case. But also, that would have been the clinical supervisor's position, as well as she's responsible for maintaining and managing the caseload in my absence. So I hope that answered your question. That's my understanding.
I guess you still haven't answered my question. So when you meant all the patients, did you just mean the ones you had sessions for during those 2 weeks, or did you mean your entire caseload?
I don't want to, provide the board with inaccurate information, and because it's such a large list and I had daily referrals, I mean, could there have been somebody who has missed? Absolutely. So I'm not going to misrepresent myself. However, every single person who, and that's why I said it's in a good place, meaning there was communication, there was a plan, and that's what I believe. So I only feel comfortable with saying for the active patients at this time.
Okay, but you didn't clarify that in the email that you sent to your supervisor.
I don't have the list. I don't have access to that. So if I said that it was in a good place, then yes, it's in a good place. Like there was no concern. I believe that I reached out, and
did you document every single person you reached out to?
I hope I did. This is something I can't verify. I don't have the system. I'm not. I don't have access to it.
Is it possible you might not have documented?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, it's possible. But again, it sounds like there was at least some confirmation that patients were contacted per HC's report that she did have that verification. Yeah, and I apologize for not having that specific information. I just didn't have access to verify or check.
So, as a clinician, albeit a large clinical load and a lot of case management as well, managing your workload and informing, do you think things could have been done differently?
Absolutely. I actually requested an assistant, as the other practices and outpatient clinics, even in prisons, were always allowed that. And they said, absolutely not. No clinicians, no counselors, psychologists are allowed that. So I do believe in the community-based practice model that is a concern. It's a concern, too, because clinicians aren't, like myself, we're not aware of the absolute demand and how much hours that takes, as well as that's unpaid hours. It's a performance based, so it's only completed sessions how you're paid. So again, I it was an adaption to this system, completely new, and hence that there was the performance review that was pending because it was a complete change. However, considering that in the learning curve, I do believe based on that I provided my due diligence because again I felt I needed to go on leave immediately, but it was delayed until the 25th. And so I was able to provide that and arrange some some patient care with case managers and have that follow-up meeting with HC. But yeah, definitely I respect and appreciate an assistant or help with that. That is something that is very, very difficult to manage, as well as providing treatment and continuity of care with other providers.
What was the average number of cases you saw each week, each day?
I was always working up towards that. But it was definitely encouraged to, I think, schedule between 9 and 12 or something to that regard, because you always want to plan for no shows. That was definitely the system to double book. I believe it was based on the monetary value versus quality patient care. So it was very difficult. And so that, I believe you can maybe confirm with HC, but it was always at least 9 and or more with a typical hour day. Is very difficult to maintain.
Okay, thank you. Those are all my questions for now.
Thank you, Dr. Malat. I just have one or two questions to follow up on the questions you have been asked Dr. Mumbi. On the documentation, what was your system of documenting towards the, was it paper pencil? Was it some software that was provided to you by Baylis, et cetera?
Okay. Thank you for asking. So there was the actual electronic medical record system was where you'd put the session notes and the contact, and that was a way that we could all, refer to if there's a referral, and obviously for billing. And then there was also an internal system that HC and I had access to, and I had, I believe it was on Excel, and it was a spreadsheet of all the patients and the information, the preferences, and the contact history, and then that needed to be inputted, obviously, into the electronic medical record system. So that's the system, and again, it was a lot of double work doing that. So asking or responding to Dr. Malot, so how would I change things, then I would eliminate that Excel sheet. It was too time consuming, and it was easy to make mistakes and not have it in the actual system. So I believe it should go directly to the electronic system where everyone has access.
So when you say you documented something, and when I hear from the complainants that you have not documented something, then what I'm hearing is the documentation should be in possession of Baylis, and they should be able to look at those records and confirm for the sake of the board what exactly was documented and what exactly wasn't. Is that a correct assessment, Dr. Mumbi?
Yes, I believe it should be in, honestly, joint possession. But I don't believe I have access to that anymore. I only have access to my Excel spreadsheet, which I may or actually may not have that because it was on the laptop that was returned. But yes, I do believe Baylis should have that. And again, I haven't had, there is no specific allegation of compromising patient care or any public harm that was done specifically to any patient. So it's hard for me, I'm sorry, to respond specifically because it's a very general allegation or concern. So I do apologize for that.
How long are your sessions, Dr. Baylis?
Well, that's something that I was working on, and I was very much encouraged to not go too long, to get them in and get them out. And my sessions typically are 53 to 60 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, and a couple sessions sometimes are longer.
Any other questions? Hearing none, I think this would be the time for the board to begin deliberations. The committee to begin deliberations. Please note that the deliberation is time for the committee members to deliberate the case amongst themselves without interruption from the complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing the licensees. Dr. Malat, since you are the lead board member, would you please begin with the deliberations?
Thank you, Mr. Diner. Yes, as I listened to you know, the complainants and kind of the entire history that was provided to us. And I listened to Dr. Mumbi and her situation. As stated earlier, there are several HR issues, and I can understand how frustrating it is for HR when, you know, certain forms are not completed. As somebody who's a supervisor myself, I face those exact same issues. However, I still want to reiterate that it is not the purview of the board to address those HR issues. But it does give us some insight in the level of Dr. Mumbi's responsiveness to questions, processes, et cetera, which can be frustrating to an agency. So I do want to make that statement. And as psychologists, we hold ourselves to the highest standard of professionalism and care. And, you know, one would expect all employees, all psychologists to be highly professional. Again, though, that is outside our purview. The part that I am concerned about, and you know, I have some understanding of the situation. I frankly was very, very surprised that that Dr. Mumbi did not have the, and I don't understand the agency, but in my experience, I've never been in a situation where you don't have the support to contact 70 plus clients and receiving new clients. For a new clinician to have a huge caseload like that and having to make all the appointments, that's a full-time job in itself. So that is very, that is concerning to me, but again, that's outside our purview, but I just want to state that. That is a big ask to ask for somebody who's, you know, spending 7 to 8 hours talking to clients, dealing with their care, and making all the appointments. And then of course, documenting all of that. So that is concerning, yet that is part of the job. And you know, that was, I think Ms. Dr. Mumbi is aware of that requirement as part of her job and her work that she has to do. The part that I am concerned, and I don't know if it falls, it is a statute violation per se, but I am concerned of Dr. Mumbi's disorganization in terms of contacting client and documenting this contact and ensuring, because as a result of that, it could lead to potential client harm. And that's where my concern comes from. When you are taking unpaid leave of absence, and we do have information in the file regarding the reasons for that unpaid leave of absence, so I don't need to go into that in a public meeting. And whether it was going to be supported by HR or not supported, whether it fell under FMLA, I think it's again outside our purview. But then, you know, we do not have clear information from Dr. Mumbi regarding, did she only contact the clients that she thought she was not going to see during those 2 weeks that she was anticipating being gone, or did she contact all 70 clients on her caseload? It's very unclear. And her email to her supervisor was also very vague, you know, kind of, yeah, don't worry, I've done my due diligence, but what is due diligence? And so that part is concerning to me. You know, it's just slippery. It's kind of slipshod. And again, not professional. So that's kind of where I stand at this point. It's kind of like, Dr. Mumbi was, you know, over, you know, she had a lot on her plate. She kind of did her best, but did she contact everybody? She wasn't clear. She could have sent an email to her supervisor saying, given the fact that I had 8 hours to make all these contacts or 1 week, because she appears that she did tell some people during the week, even before her supervisor knew that she was going on leave. She did let some of them know, some of them didn't know, it's very, very slipshod and unprofessional, you know. And there was no clear communication. This is the best I could do. I've contacted 15 clients. These 35 should have been, I did not have the time to contact. And since I'm out of time now, it's 5 o'clock on September 24th, they need to be reached out. Very clear communication could have been done, you know, to avoid any perception of possible client harm. You know, she took care of her high-risk cases, and she wasn't able to answer my question on who did she contact, and the email to her supervisor didn't clarify that. So that's my summary.
Thank you, Dr. Malad. Dr. Catrino.
Yes, I feel that we don't have all the information. I would really almost wish I could see an Excel spreadsheet of the client's initials, the date they were contacted and their response, and you know, and then on the follow-up call, if this was correct, or see, know that something was documented in each of the files. So yeah, I think they said that maybe they could get that at Baylor, so maybe we need to get that information. I don't know if we can make a determination without that. I would feel differently if every person on the caseload was, that there was documentation that they were contacted and their response, or they were given a referral. Because otherwise it might be construed as client abandonment. So that, I would like to get that information, and they said they might be able to give that to us. The other thing I wondered about is that's, you know, we're looking at 6 months leave maybe, and then 4 months from when they fired her. But I wondered, and then I'm unsure if she were able to practice in her own practice for a little bit, but not able to practice at Bayless, how, you know, how much she needed that full leave, if she could still do some practice in her own practice. So that's what to summarize, I'd like to see if we could get that information. To see if the documentation that the clients were not contacted.
Thank you, Dr. Catrino. I am also a bit concerned with the documentation of which clients were contacted and which weren't, because I'm looking at our definition for unprofessional conduct, and subsection H says one of the things that constitutes unprofessional conduct is failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to the psychological services provided to a client or patient. And that's really the focus of my concern. So if you can look at that information and maybe make a determination of whether there is a violation, I would like to see that. But for purposes of our initial review here in the complaint screening committee, we need to decide if it's just further information, or if the information that we have is sufficient for us to refer the matter to the full board or to dismiss the complaint.
To clarify, so can we cannot meet again with the new information? If we need the new information, we have to go to the full board? Is that
correct? Let's ask Ms. Galvin.
You could table this matter and request that the additional information be presented to this committee, take up your review once that information is received. I don't know if it exists. There was testimony that, based on recollection, at least 10 or 15 patients had not been contacted.
But she did say that she could get the more exact records. That was off the top of the head, but she could get it.
That's my recollection.
So then I would like to see if we could, rather than bring it to the full board right now, to meet again after we get the records from both sides about the individual.
Dr. Mumbi does not have access because she doesn't.
Okay, then from Bayless.
So is Bayless clear what information they would want that the committee is requesting?
I don't know if the committee, but what I would request is that they have initials of each of the clients on her caseload, on Dr. Mumbi's caseload, and then what they found in the files when they were notified by phone call, by email, however they were notified, and then another column for when they called, when the Bayless called, if the client indeed had received that documentation, that notice that she was on leave.
So the other couple of things that if this documentation is like who was active and who was inactive and who actually had an appointment in those 2 weeks when she first announced that she was gone.
I think so that everyone on the caseload, active or inactive, would need to be contacted.
Yeah, yeah, but I'd like to have a column indicating.
Oh, yeah, an extra column, sure.
And if there was documentation in the file that Dr. Mumby did indeed contact them, and then the ones that was contacted by by the supervisor.
The HC. Okay, well, okay, so.
So maybe we would post next. This. I don't think we're meeting in the month of June, but we are meeting in July. Is that correct?
That's correct, Dr. Malott. So this case will come back to the committee's review on July 21st, assuming we have that documentation.
Thank you. And I just also wanted to mention that, you know, the obligation, the unprofessional conduct definition, the way it's written, it imposes the obligation of maintaining the records on the psychologist. And it is a bit concerning to me that Bayless would not have that, or even Dr. Mumby would not have that clear channel of communication open, because ultimately it's the psychologist's responsibility to maintain these records. And if, from what I'm hearing or what I'm seeing, it seems like to some extent Bayless may have not cooperated with Dr. Mumby's ability to reach out to these patients. I mean, there have been a few comments made about lack of access to the records and so forth. So I just wanted to mention that, and I appreciate all of you being here, and we would appreciate if you could give us the information that the committee is requesting at your earliest convenience. So with that,
a point of clarification.
Yes.
Can we provide that additional information to address some of the other things that were mentioned just now, or are we only allowed to provide that spreadsheet? Because I think there's been a lot of inaccurate information and portrayal of that access and expectations. So I don't know if we can provide more information than the spreadsheet, or if that's the only thing we can provide.
I think Ms. Galvin might know that.
That's up to the committee. The committee's requested just the spreadsheet with respect to patients who had been contacted, and I don't hear any desire from the committee to have any additional information provided.
What type of information you want to rebut some of the statements that you made? Is that what you want? I don't know what the information is you want to rebut. Yeah.
Well, she had complete access to her caseload the entire time she was employed. The electronic medical record she had complete access to. She could pull records, contact information, document the entire time she was employed. And the expectation of her responsibilities and caseload and number of hours during the week, all of that has been misconstrued.
So I did see an email from HR stating very clearly, and I'm familiar with that kind of an email because we send it out to at my agency, that no contact.
Once you're on leave, correct. Yes. Once the leave officially started, correct.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So.
Don't mind just clarifying. Yeah, IT actually cut off my email access and any electronic information or any shared documents as soon as that leave started. So it wasn't the entire time I was employed. That was inaccurate. It was as soon as the leave started. I had no
access. Was September 26th, like the Monday after you gave notice on Thursday?
Potentially the 25th, 26th, something to that, maybe even the 25th, because that was the Friday.
So there were could have been 3 days, even though some were weekends, where you could have continued to contact clients.
I speak to the ITs. It sounded like it was immediate. I can, and all the emails I received, I didn't receive them after a certain point, but that can be easily verified if that's a concern.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can provide a report to show when her systems access was shut off for email, as well as our EMR record system.
You know, I would like to see that. If maybe no one else does, yes. But I would like to know that.
I agree, Dr. Catrino. Thank you. So with that, let's table this matter for the July meeting. Thank you again, everyone, for being here and for your time. So let's move on to the remaining complaint. Thank you. Let's move on to the remaining complaint on the agenda.
Okay, this is...
Dr. Catrino, since you are the lead, you may proceed.
Okay, this is a complaint number 2118, Dr. Colleen Kowalki. Is that correct pronunciation?
Yes.
Okay, so here's what I have. So is SB present, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, so SB alleged in her complaint that Dr. Kowalki did not respond to her request for records in a timely manner. Dr. Kowalki completed an evaluation on April 28th, 2020. This evaluation included several screening instruments and a written report. Then SB was referred to a supervisee of Dr. Kowalki, Julie Wessel, who was seeking licensure as an associate professional counselor. SB attended one session and did not return. Also, SB sent a Blue Cross Blue Shield EOB form, which reflected that Dr. Kowalki's claim was paid on May 4th, 2020. On 6-8, SB sent a written request for her records. She wanted them released to herself only. Then she sent a second request on August 5th, 2020, and a third request on September 3rd, 2020. These records requests were all in the complaint, but of course we don't have any documentation that Dr. Kowalki received them, but they were according to SB sent. On April 1st, 2021, SB filed a complaint about her not receiving her records pursuant to 12-22-93. I did check that, and I couldn't find it says the record should be released unless certain circumstances, but I couldn't find a timeline on how soon the records have to be released. Maybe that's listed somewhere else. Then the records were finally sent on April 14th, 2021, just about a year after that first date of service. And then the board checked with SB on 4/23/21, and she had received the records. Now, the response from Dr. Kowalki, she said she only received the first record request, and then she set it aside. I don't know why she set it aside, but she set it aside. And then she said she did not receive any further requests. She said the mail might have gone to her landlord, and they usually distribute the letters to her, but she didn't get them. So then she found out about the complaint, and on April 14th, via certified mail, she sent the records. And then since then, Dr. Kowalki has made a few changes in her practice. She now has a PO box near her office, and all the correspondence would be sent there, and the previous mail will be forwarded there. She has an administrative assistant who will collect and sort her mail prior to a weekly meeting, and the administrative assistant will create a file for pending record requests and set a date for collecting materials. Dr. Kowalki has also submitted evidence of attending two CEs online. One was a one credit course, record keeping for practitioners, on April 30th, and another three credit course from Zurer Institute on HIPAA patient rights. And that was just recently completed. So those are the main things that I see. I did have a couple questions for Dr. Kowalki, but I guess, what do I do now? I stop or I ask my questions? I'm not sure.
Dr. Catrino, no, that would be sufficient for the summary. And now I'll have SB make a statement if they wish.
Yes, thank you.
We'll proceed that way. So SB, if you're present, will you please state your initials for the record, and you may make a statement for the board, the committee, I keep mixing those two up. And then the committee members might have some questions to ask you. You may proceed, thank you. SB, if you are on the phone, we can't hear you. You might need to unmute yourself.
There is, looks like she's there.
Show she's unmuted.
Maybe she just left. Is there a way to call her or something?
She can call in. SB does have the phone information, but it would also ultimately be up to the committee if they want to proceed with the case review without her.
Well, Ms. Michelson, if there is a way to contact her, maybe just ping her and see if she can use any alternative ways to sign in. And meanwhile, why don't we hear from Dr. Kowalki? And I believe, Dr. Kowalki, you have representation?
Yes.
Yes, so your attorney, if they could speak up and state their name for the record, and then the board might have questions to ask your attorney or yourself. You may proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Dr. Farron Akins. I'm counsel for your licensee in this matter, and I'll let her introduce herself, and I know she does have some words she'd like to provide to the board on this matter.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'd like to say good morning, committee members. And I'd like to thank you all for allowing me to address you today with regard to issues brought before you in this matter. In the time that I have today, I'd like to share with you the details of what happened, although it sounds like you heard of them already, and what I've done in response to this complaint. In June of 2020, I did receive a letter at my office from the complainant, which was a request for records for the two appointments that she had with us. One in April and one in May. I met with the client for the initial assessment, and then she met with the therapist she was assigned to at my practice. The client only had these two appointments at our office. After getting the request from the complainant, I spoke to the therapist, Ms. Wessels, about it briefly, and we both acknowledged that it needed to be taken care of. I did put the request on my desk, and it must have got mixed up in other papers, and regrettably, it just simply didn't get done. I did not speak to the therapist about it after, and I didn't make a copy or anything for her, and I didn't even think about it until I got the notice from the board. So when I received the notice from the board staff, I sent the records right away by certified mail, as was stated, and I did get the acknowledgement that they were received. The perplexing part for me was that the complainant indicated that there were two other requests that were sent, which I definitely did not receive. So I was distressed about that situation with my mail, and that the records didn't get sent out in the time that I would have liked them. So I have set about to make efforts to correct the problem in order to ensure that that didn't happen again. So the situation at my office is that I rent our office spaces from my landlord, who operates his business on the other side of the building. There are several other therapists with me on my side of the building who rent office space from him as well. And all the mail for the entire building comes to his business, and his staff will periodically bring it over to our side. If we're not there, they sometimes slip it under the door. I have noticed that it takes a long time sometimes before they drop it off. Now, normally I don't get a lot of mail at the office because I previously did have all my business mail going to the post office and I pick it up there. I've had that for a couple of years now. After receiving the notice from the board, I did go to the post office to complete forms to forward my mail to my post office box. However, I learned that the post office can't forward mail that is going to a business, so I was not able to do that. So I simply am going to have my administrative assistant walk over to the other side of the building twice a week to get the mail for us. I've also added a line to our policies and procedures form that all clients sign to send correspondence to our post office address. And I've also altered our professional letterhead to include the post office box. I just call it mailing address versus service address or location. I've also talked to my administrative assistant about helping with other duties that to improve our efficiency. We already go over all the mail together that she picks up from the post office twice a week. And now she'll additionally go to the other side of the building and get mail from there. So going forward, any requests for records will be assigned a due date, which I will note in my own calendar, and she will help by gathering the records that are requested. And I'll finalize everything before it goes out, but we will send it through certified mail like I did in this time by our due date. And as already mentioned, since all of this has happened, I have taken some continuing education. Like was mentioned, I took an ethical record keeping class and a client's access to records class, and I found them to be very helpful, informative, and I would recommend them to anyone who has to send records out, who gets requests for records. So in closing, I would like to say that in this case, the procedures were not done in a way that I would have liked. And I am taking the opportunity to improve the process, which I think running a practice is a constant improvement in order to avoid any issues like this that come up in the future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Kowalki. Do any of the committee members have any questions?
I do. So, Dr. Kowalki, what was the purpose of completing the psychological evaluation? Was this originally done for SB? Did she ask for an evaluation?
No, we start our process with clients by doing an assessment and intake. And we use that in order to help us with diagnosing, with treatment plans, making recommendations for the therapists. And so we have most of our clients, we make some exceptions, but most of our clients come in for the initial assessment. And there is myself and another psychologist that works for me who do the assessments.
So then after that's completed, do you have a feedback session usually with SB going over the results and she's not given a copy?
They can certainly go over, usually in around the third session, both the other psychologist and myself will let them know that the therapist will go over if they would like the results of the assessment.
I don't see why it would be the third, because I would think you would make a treatment plan at the first session with the therapist, and they would need the evaluation, the client and the therapist working together to just develop the treatment plan. So I would have thought she would have seen that report at her first session with Julie Wessel or a feedback one from you, and she would have said at that moment, oh, can I have a copy? I would think normally when I do an evaluation, I give that copy to the client so they know what their results were and they can understand their issues and how I perceive them. So I was just surprised that this was completed with these screening measures. And then it was just filed away. No one really did a treatment plan with it. The client wasn't informed of it. I don't know. So I would see why she wants the records. Wanted to know how she scored on the test.
Sure. We follow, like the treatment plan is usually done within 10 days. The therapist usually can meet with the client first. And usually by their second session, they can work on a treatment plan and go over the results of the assessment. That's kind of the way that we've been doing
that. Well, because you have two different individuals working with the client, I guess. Yeah. But I think it still might be something to incorporate into your practice is the person that did the evaluation would go over it because, you know, as an assistant counselor, she doesn't have the expertise you have in giving assessments as a psychologist, that you would go over the results of the report and with the recommendations with as a feedback session. Because, you know, even now, as she gets the evaluation, she didn't have anyone to interpret it with her besides your written report. She didn't have any, you know, an educated psychologist going over and saying, this is what this means. And I think they should get that information when they're given the records, especially in an evaluation.
We do, we have had sessions with the client in order to explain things to them if they would like. But what we've been doing is that the therapist that's going to meet with them, they read over the assessment, and in our supervision sessions, they ask and we explain to them anything that they might want to talk to them about. And if the client wants to talk to us, I have met with clients on a couple of occasions to go over the results. So for us, we think of it, it's sort of an option.
So yeah, then do you have any record of phone calls being made to your office by SB asking for records?
No.
Okay. Thank you, then.
Thank you, Dr. Gattarino. Any other questions? Yes, Dr. Malat.
This is Dr. Malat. The complaint that was filed was regarding, you know, the release of records, and you've acknowledged that you, you know, misfiled the very first letter, and the MAVE issue, and that you've taken care of the MAVE issue. Could you talk briefly about how you handle other requests for records?
Well, we don't get many requests for records at all. In fact, some record requests come by fax, and on the few occasions that they have, it was from like a hospital who maybe had had us as a referral source, but that client never came to us. So I have made a few phone calls to places where I would have no place to document to say, I don't know this client. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we don't get a lot of requests for records. I think SB was the first one that I sent out where I gathered the information and actually sent them out.
Okay. So how familiar are you then with the process of responding to records requests?
Well, I have it right in front of me here. And it says that in Arizona, of course, we have to respond to a written request, which, you know, that actually was the intention. And of course, the intention was also to do it in a timely manner. Regretfully, mm-hmm. I did not. And in the future, if we get records requests, we definitely have a plan for how we're going to take care of that.
Okay. I have no further questions.
What do you consider a timely manner?
I would say 30 days. I mean, immediately is, you know, is, we would, when we get a request in the future, although I didn't state it, I would say that our due date would be within a week to 2 weeks is what we would expect. There's no reason why we couldn't pull those records together and get them right out to the client. You know, that was okay. My intention is always that efficient.
Was there any attempt by Julie Wessel to follow up with the client when she didn't show up anymore?
No, because in the note, she was pretty clear. Let me just find it here. That she said, I need to cancel my May 13 appointment at noon. I'll let you know if I decide to reschedule. And so that was the reason that Julia, you know, let her not chase her down and ask her. So we just left the ball in her court in that regard.
So Dr. Kowalki, if I may ask you a few questions. I heard you say that you have sort of revised your mailing address process and how you collect the mail. So from what I'm understanding, you now have multiple addresses, and have you given any thought to who has which address? Because that I can see how that can be confusing for someone who is trying to obtain records from you.
Well, we have always, since SB came to us, we previously had switched all of our mail. And that includes anyone through business, insurance companies, or my CPA, or other business entities that use us. Everything goes to the PO box. And you're right that anyone who might want some records might not know that we have that PO box. And so they likely would send it to the service address. And that is precisely why the changes that I've made since this complaint have been that we're putting that address on our policies form, which they sign, you know, before they start. And also, you know, on any letterhead. And so, yes, I agree that the post office box is something that they would have to do some research, you know, and there are actually other places that I could put it as well that I'd considered, but I haven't done yet, like any advertising we do, like the website or our Psychology Today page, just to make it really clear. It's just that it's rare. It seems to me that it's rare, but you know, if there is a request for records, yes, they should be able to see where to request that. Or you know, they could simply call us or email us and say, what would I do for a records request? Although it has to be in writing. So,
By the way, I had my business mail forwarded with no problem from the post office, by the way.
Is that right? I have a letter saying that we can't do this because of a business address. I could provide that as well.
I did. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, Dr. Diner.
No, you're fine. So let's see if SB can...
Mr. Chairman, I just want to clarify the complainant SB did respond to my email that I sent her a few minutes ago, and she indicated that she did not want to make a statement to the committee.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Michelson. So then this would be the time for the committee to begin deliberations. As a reminder, the complainants, the licensee or the attorney for the licensee doesn't participate in the deliberation process. Only the committee members may deliberate amongst themselves. So Dr. Catrino, since you are the lead on this, would you please commence? Thank you.
Well, I mean, I do think a year from the date of service is a long time to send records, and then that there were three requests. You know, I do see that the psychologist has tried to change things now and made things more efficient. I'm really a little torn. I don't think that we should just dismiss it, but maybe just a letter of concern, or what's the next step up where there's a letter of concern that you know, need to follow up and send records in a timely manner? Or is there,
I think the letter of concern with CE, though, Dr. Kowalki did a CE on record keeping. I was pleased to see that she's indicated all the changes she's made. So I think I would be okay with a letter of concern, because she's really done due diligence in addressing this. And, you know, I appreciate her forthright acknowledgement of the problem, and, you know, so.
Okay. Yeah,
she does admit to getting the first letter. Go ahead.
I do tend to agree that there is some concern with the amount of time it took to comply with the records request. And I'm looking at our statutes, the definition, one of the definitions for unprofessional conduct is subsection S. It says failing to make client or patient records in the psychologist's possession promptly available. So this sort of goes to Dr. Catarino's questions regarding, you know, what do you think is a reasonable time to respond to these? I mean, we don't have a better word than promptly, but promptly sounds quite prompt to me. So with that, is there any further discussion or is there a motion?
I make a motion that we send a letter of concern to Dr. Kowalczyk.
I think we
Ms. Galvin has something.
This would be a recommendation to the full board for a letter of concern. It would go to their initial case review. And then part of that recommendation could be that you would recommend a letter of concern, non-disciplinary CE, and then accept perhaps the CE that she has taken. Mr. Akins, perhaps you and I, if it's agreeable to your client, we could enter into an agreement where you would agree to the entry of those things. And then we would still send it to the board, obviously, and then they could just approve that letter of concern and the non-disciplinary order of CE or hold the initial case review.
I can certainly talk to my client about this, but I don't think there would be any objection to what you've proposed.
Okay. So we could just tee it up for the board, make your recommendation to refer it to the full board for possible violation of S, and leave it to the state and Dr. Akins and his client perhaps to offer those documents and settlements to the board at its next meeting.
Would you propose to put that on the consent agenda, or for certain you would still need the licensee to make an appearance at that meeting?
I think that if it is already signed and entered into and consented to by you and your client, then we could put it on the consent agenda. And if it looks like for some reason the board's not going to accept it, then we would just continue and hold the initial review at a date where your client would attend.
Very good. Thank you for that clarification. That will help in terms of explaining the process from here to my client.
I'm comfortable with that, Ms. Galvin.
Me too.
So, Dr. Catarino, you had an unfinished motion to make, or?
Well, then I guess I know that. I guess the motion would be that it goes to the full board. Is that if I'm correct?
Correct. For a possible violation of 2061S.
Yes.
16S. And then we can just leave it at that. And then we understand that we'll work on resolving the matter and presenting it to the board for final adjudication.
Yes, I echo what Ms. Galvin said.
So there's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. There's none opposed. The motion passes. Thank you, Dr. Kowalczyk. Thank you, Mr. Akins, for being here. Thank you for your time. So I think that completes all of the complaints on our agenda. Do I hear a motion for adjournment?
Thank you. We'll sign off now.
So moved. Okay.
Second.
There is a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None opposed. The motion passes. So we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Take care.
Great job. Bye.